This is OTB AM.
This Liverpool team are going to coast to a league title. Fair enough, that's a great achievement. But that Man United team were an all-time great because they weren't playing very well early in the season.
Does Everton have to happen in the same period of time though? Did Liverpool not have those elements of that team?
They have to win the Champions League. They have to win the Champions League this year. But not if they're... To equal Manchester United's treble season, they have to win at least the Champions League in the league, right? And you could say that by not winning a cup, if they don't win a cup, then they're not... It's not as good a season. Man United are always going to be able to say, we won a treble. Did you win a treble? No.
OTB AM, Ireland's only sports breakfast show. Weekdays from 7.30 AM, only on OTB Sports Radio. Live 24/7 on the Go Loud app. The OTB Podcast Network with Virgin Media. Catch all of the UEFA Champions League and Europa League games live on Virgin Media TV.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Time for us to turn our attention to rugby. Alan Quinlan, welcome back.
Cheers, Ger. How are you?
It's good to have some rugby to talk about.
Yeah, it is. It's been a long time coming now. So hopefully it'll be a good weekend. But certainly with these derby matches, they have to hit the ground running, really. You'd worry a little bit about maybe there'll be a little bit of rustiness. But who cares about rustiness? Just to get some rugby back on and the Pro 14. I know we've seen some stuff in New Zealand the last couple of weeks and their Super Rugby competition and in Australia, but certainly this will get the blood flowing a little bit this weekend, hopefully.
What level of rugby do you expect? I mean, there's definitely part of me that is like you saying, I don't really care if it's the worst game of rugby and it's a nil-all draw, we'll still be like, well, at least we've got something to watch.
Yeah, what level is... That's a good question, I think. Look, it's difficult for all the players, and probably there's an expectation that we'll get great games. We may not. We may do. Who knows? But usually at the start of the season, all these teams that have a couple of warm-up games played, that have ironed out some of the problems and issues, but they have to hit the ground running, really, which is a bit of pressure on them. They've had about 9 weeks now of a pre-season, if you like. All the players will be fresh. Lots of niggles and injuries will be healed up. I know all the four provinces have some guys who are carrying knocks and injuries, but I think there'll be a fair bite and intensity to the games because of the determination and a hunger, really. I've heard all the coaches talk this week about the anticipation and the hunger of the players to get back playing. And for Leinster, it's a little bit different because I know they want to hit the ground running, but they don't need to win these two games. They're already guaranteed a home semi-final. But what they probably want to do, and it's something they've spoken about, is go unbeaten in the season. Before the lockdown, I think they were in incredible form. 13 wins in the Pro 14 and unbeaten in Europe as well. The last time they've lost a game was the Champions Cup final last year against Saracens. So I'm not really sure that... You know, you're going to see some mistakes and some errors, and it's going to be eerie and surreal with no crowds there. But certainly, I'm sure the players, and if I was one of the players, I'd be just itching to get out on the field and play a rugby again.
It's going to lash rain, it's going to howl wind all evening tomorrow until about 8 o'clock, at which point, apparently, the weather's going to get much better. So it's almost as if nature itself wants to see what happens when Leinster and Munster play at the Aviva tomorrow night.
Yeah, they've just got to adapt. The weather has been horrendous all week for them training as well. So I'm sure there's a lot of focus on trying to hold on to the ball and limit their mistakes and do the basics really well. That's what you've got to do at the start. I don't think you'll see either side firing the ball around willy-nilly in that first Irish game. I know there's going to be games on before that in the Pro 14, which certainly the Irish coaches will be... the provincial coaches will be keeping an eye on. Munster will be hoping that Glasgow can beat Edinburgh, which would mean that if they win the two games, they'll top the Conference B. But and Ulster will be hoping that they can, if results go their way, and Edinburgh beat Glasgow, they're through. They're guaranteed a semi-final draw. But Ulster only need 2 points. Leinster probably don't need any points, but that won't make a difference to them. But Munster, for Munster, they need to win the two games and hope Edinburgh lose one of the games to avoid Leinster in a semi-final, which they won't publicly say, but I think they'd probably prefer to avoid Leinster in a semi-final.
We've seen
big-time professional sport come back successfully in terms of the Champions League and Europa League, and those games have happened. And so there's definitely a template for the roadmap that World Rugby has laid out from now all the way through to next summer for it to happen, notwithstanding the fact that there were rumblings in South Africa that maybe the Lions Tour won't go ahead if there's no fans and no supporters. We'll see what happens. I think World Rugby would probably do everything they possibly can for that sense of normality to come back and for that to happen next year. So let's assume that, fingers crossed, touch wood, all the rest, that rugby happens the way it's supposed to happen between now and next summer. It is the busiest period of top quality rugby that is ever going to have happened in world history, really.
Yeah, it is. And you look at Leinster's run of matches and Ulster. But you'd imagine Leinster will go all the way to a Champions Cup final, and the next 5 or 6 weeks for them is going to be just incredibly intense, because they're going to have to rotate their squad. They have probably the best squad in Europe. They're the envy of a lot of teams across Europe. They play Munster this week, Ulster next week. Then they've got a semi-final of a Pro 14. You'd imagine a final of a Pro 14. Then they've got the Champions Cup quarterfinal against Saracens, a semi-final, and probably a final. So they've probably 5-6 weeks of rotation and incredible intensity. Will Ulster go and beat Toulouse in a quarterfinal in the Champions Cup in September? That's going to be a tall order for them. But then they go straight into, you know, the Pro 14 gets back up and running, the new season in October, and then you've got the international run. So it's going to be an incredibly busy, busy year, and so many matches coming week after week. And I suppose squad depth is going to be the key to that, and avoiding injuries, which is very, very difficult. You're always going to get different bangs and knocks. But we saw this week with the unfortunate news around Joey Carberry that Munster are going to be without him for an indefinite period, which is a massive blow, because you think with the South African signings, Matt Gallagher coming in as well, a little bit more depth, Tadhg Byrne coming back from injury. The hope was that Carberry be back and that they could build up some momentum before they'll probably lose the South Africans to the Rugby Championship in November and December, which is going to be difficult for them. But all the squads are going to be really, really tested with their depths. And you know, for any of the coaches, they'll be just be hoping that they can get a bit of luck with injuries.
Yeah, and look, the far side of that, all you want to do is still be standing, and whenever they come back, have a chance to compete. Let's talk a little bit about Joey Carberry. I want to bring you what Luke Fitzgerald was saying. It's the biggest short-termism I've ever seen. You've got to push back on people. You have a 12-year window. He was 23 at the time. He had the chance to go to two more World Cups. If you're not right, you're not right. Any injuries below the knee, you have to be careful with them. They don't heal well. Unfortunately, this is one area of rugby I know too well. Below the knee is a disaster. If your body is not right, your body is not right. He's making the case that Joey Carberry shouldn't have gone to the World Cup, that the IRFU or somebody needed to step in and say, we value you as a long-term asset, and I'm sorry, you're going to have to sit this one out, because ultimately, you know, we need to think long-term with it. What was your take on that?
Well, professional sport is win now, win at all costs, and that's just the reality of it. And I think, you know, I respect Luke a lot, and he's been through the mill with his own injuries, having to retire as well. What I would say to Luke is, what would he have done in the situation? Sometimes it's kind of trust between coaches and players, and Joe Schmidt would have done everything in his power to try and get Joey Carberry to the World Cup in Japan. I'd be pretty sure that the medical advice didn't go against that and say, well, the medics were saying don't take him, and Joe was saying take him. We're taking him anyway. There's always a calculated risk, and hindsight's a great thing. I think it's a lot of people have an opinion on this week that he shouldn't have went to the World Cup, and he probably shouldn't have, given what's after happening afterwards. But the medical advice at the time would have been that he was going to recover, and there's always a danger. You know, I came back from injuries myself, my shoulder injury, my knee injury, and they were risks. I came back and got involved in 06 in the European Cup kind of running to the final, about 2.5-3 weeks before that final. And, you know, if I had come on, I only came on for 4 minutes in that Heineken Cup final in 06, but if I had ruptured my knee again or twisted it some way and tore the ligament again, well, my career could have been over. That's just the reality of the risk you got to take. And Like I said, as no medics would have stood over a situation where they would have advised the Irish management that he's not fit to go. And sometimes it's down to the player himself, you know, to make that call. And it's very, very difficult. And I guarantee if Luke was in that position, he would have been trying to get to that World Cup himself. So, like I say, hindsight's a great thing. And it's easy to say it now that he damaged the ligaments in his ankle or in the Italy game. And, you know, he would have been massively enthusiastic about trying to get to that World Cup and get back. And it hasn't worked out, unfortunately. And making that decision is a huge decision to say, well, look, I'm going to miss out on the World Cup because there's a risk. There's always a risk. And that's the balance you've got to strike. Do you play a player in a, you know, we've often seen players at the end of a season with shoulder injuries or ligament injuries or players maybe having to get a cortisone injection to try and get through a run into the end of the season. I'm not saying that's right, but I'm just saying it happens a lot, and that's professional sport. So, you know, Joey Carberry was the one who probably knew best himself whether he should have went to that World Cup. And if it worked out and he was back playing, it didn't work out. So you'll always have people questioning that decision, and it's easy to question it now. But at the end of the day, the player would have wanted to go to the World Cup himself and wouldn't have gone against medical advice.
Do you have any idea how long indefinitely might be? It's obviously how long is a piece of string, but what would your expectation when you see somebody is out indefinitely? What do you think?
I think indefinitely is the word indefinitely is used to give, to take away the pressure. So it's about, you know, becoming pain-free for him. He has pain in the ankle and it's causing him discomfort. So he's had an operation there. So he's obviously got to rehab for another while and another couple of months. And I think if you set a date and if they said, look, Joey Carby's going to be back in 8 weeks or 6 weeks or 4 weeks, well, then there's massive pressure on him to do that. So unfortunately, Gerard, we don't know when he's going to be back. What I'm hearing is that maybe not as bad as people are speculating. Some people are saying, you know, this is career threatening, and every injury is career threatening because you can get the same injury again. You can, if you damage something a second time or a third time, they're all career threatening, and there can be an issue and a problem going forward. So we don't have any idea in the time frame, but the word indefinitely is used to give the player a little bit of time and take away and take that pressure off him. But hopefully this side of Christmas we will see him, unless he needs another operation, which is I don't think that's the case. I think it's just he's got to get rid of the pain out of the ankle, and hopefully we'll see him soon back.
Yeah, that'll be good. Sometime before Christmas will be great. Shane, you've got some stuff about the South Africans?
Yeah, Alan, you mentioned Damian Dialendi and RG Snyman there, and Jer had mentioned in the papers that the expectancy is that they'll at least be considered from the start tomorrow evening. But the lads, Jer and Owen, were calling Munster the Galacticos of European rugby this week. What's a realistic expectation for Munster over the coming year or two? Because clearly with these acquisitions of the South Africans, you know, expectancy amongst the fans at least will be huge.
Yeah, well, you know, getting to number semi-finals in the last couple of years, not making the knockout stages this year probably is frustrating for people involved in Munster. And I think if you can, you know, and probably doesn't sit easy with everyone, Shane, that particularly in throughout Ireland, that, you know, Munster have a lot of outside players, overseas players, players from other provinces. I think there is a bit more optimism and enthusiasm about some of the young players that are coming through. Craig Casey, Ben Healy, Jake Flannery, Jack Crowley, Thomas Ahern, Jack O'Sullivan, Gavin Coombs, Liam Coombs. These guys, there's a lot of good young players coming through, and they've been involved in the Irish under-20s in the last couple of years, and I've probably left out a few. So I think the whole thinking behind signing them is close the gap, get into knockout stages in Europe and be in a position to win. And I think if you have Carberry back, Ty Byrne back, and you have someone like Dialendi and Snyman to come into the team, it definitely makes them a different proposition. If they had everyone fit and available, you think that they could be knocking on the door of maybe taking that step past the semi-final of Europe and maybe being in contention to win it. So there is pressure and expectation. I think they're to have these players available for the running of the the Pro 14 is a massive boost to him. The biggest setback is Carberry, because I think your fly half is someone who, when you have that top quality, you look at Leinster, their success, Saracen's success, with Owen Farrell, Johnny Sexton, when you have world-class 10 or an international quality 10, it makes a huge, huge difference. So there is some young, exciting players coming through, but it's about the here and now. When you spend big money on World Cup winners and world-class players, it's about the here and now. So Munster have to try and get in, obviously get into that semi-final and get into the final. I don't think they'll be knocked, and it'll be a disaster if they don't win the Pro 14, because I think it's Leinster's to lose really at this stage. But you know, I think they should be really targeting getting into the final and giving it a real crack, and then gradually building throughout the season and hoping that you know, like I said to Gerard a while ago, all these teams have got to manage the season in different blocks with internationals away and stuff like that, and they're not going to get to play all the time because they're still going to be involved with South Africa. But there is more strength and depth there, but they've got to integrate some of those young, exciting players in the Pro 14 and hopefully get to a level where they are knocking on the door. So the expectation and pressure is there. But I would say that if you're looking at RG Snyman and Damien D'Alinda to win your matches, that's a mistake. I think the other players have got to, you know, step up, play well, they've got to get consistency in their game, and then in those tight games, someone like Snyman, who's a wrecking ball, can, you know, win a line out close to the line, add that extra power and strength to get over, score a try, get a turnover. D'Alinda can get you a real pivot point and 12, or distribute to somebody to put him in for a try, and that's what happens in these tight games, that extra little bit of quality. And Munster have been lacking that little bit of that final bit of quality, and these guys will certainly give him options. Matt Galler is a very exciting prospect. It looks like he'll start at full back as well. So I think more scrutiny and eyes will be on how those guys do tomorrow for Munster. But it's still going to be very, very difficult. Leinster have built up a winning mentality. Obviously, you've got to try and get a bit of momentum going again, but they have a top-class side and probably the envy of Europe with the quality and depth. Leo Cullen hasn't signed anybody this year because his biggest problem is trying to hold on to the players he has, but they've so much quality, Leinster, and I think that's what Munster are trying to do, close that gap and win a trophy. Some people don't agree with it, as I said, with all the non-Munster players that are probably going to be involved throughout the season, but I think there is some comfort in some very, very exciting young Munster players that are coming through, and Johan van Graan has got to integrate them. So someone like Thomas Ahern, so if you're paying RG Snyman and John Klein as your starting locks in Europe in the massive games, well, there's certainly an important part of Thomas Ahern's development. He was fantastic for the under-20s. He is not just a potential international. I think Thomas Ahern is a potential lion. He's that good and can be that good. So they've got to make sure that they manage his time and his moments really well, and that he gets integrated into the team. And ideally, you'd love to see more Munster guys in the team. But the reality is that
if you don't,
they've got to win.
If you don't buy somebody who is world-class, he doesn't have world-class in training every day and he doesn't see what the standards is, he gets into the team a bit early and thinks, well, I've got it made now. Whereas actually having somebody world-class for him to aspire to makes it more likely that he will be a success.
Yeah, and it's sometimes, Jerry, it's the overseas players. It's not just about the quality that they can bring from a playing point of view. It's the development and help of other players. Will Damien D'Alinda make Rory Scannell a better player? Will, you know, Rory Scannell is an international with a couple of caps and a really, really good Munster player. Will he step his game up and kind of push towards, you know, getting into the international side or going to the next level? Or will he accept that, well, D'Alinda will start the big games and I'll sit in the bench? Or will he, you know, be an option to fly half for Rory Scannell? He's a brilliant footballer. Yeah. And I had that situation with Jim Williams when he signed. You know, do I sit back and sulk and say, well, Jim is going to start at six with Axel and Wally and I'm going to be on the bench for the year? Or do I fight hard for it? So
it
can have
player.
A really... Of course it can. And sometimes these things work out where there's going to be an injury or two. So Thomas Ahern, Billy Holland, these guys have got to... Particularly Thomas Ahern, he's got to say, well, I want to play with Snyman. in the second row. So I'm going to take on John Klein for that spot, you know, and look at the opportunity.
Wouldn't that be great? Alan, great stuff. Rugby's back. Enjoy this weekend. We'll talk to you on Monday. Thanks a million.
Cheers. Thanks, lads.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
The OTB Podcast Network with Virgin Media. Catch all of the UEFA Champions League and Europa League games live on Virgin Media TV.